Hello, Bonsai friends. This is Evan Pardue of Underhill Bonsai, and welcome to episode 103 of Little Things for Bonsai People. It is the year 2025. I haven't checked to see what the calendar, what is it, the year of?
That's too bad. I was really hoping.
What year are we in? For 2025, as far as the dragon, I guess?
The Chinese zodiac?
Oh, no. It's different. Okay. So it says that it is the year of the snake, the Chinese zodiac. So that one's interesting. Okay, we'll put that in there. Yeah. So it is 2025, the year of the snake. I like that because I just went, not too long ago, I went to Tattoo A-Go-Go down in New Orleans, Louisiana. Shout out to Tattoo A-Go-Go and Scott that works out of that shop. I just got a snake tattoo, so that feels kind of ironic and kind of, it matches up kind of weird.
That's cool.
Yeah. But anyway, so yep, that's what year it is, and I drugged that out too long. But today I'm joined by, if you couldn't hear already, my co-host, Carmen Lesko-Viansky, formerly over in Portland, but now in Michigan. How's it going, Carmen?
Good. How are you?
Doing all right. A lot of stuff going on. I'm pretty sure you're busy as well.
Yeah.
So we have a lot to talk about today, about a winter check-in, you know, just to see how things have been going. We're going to ask Carmen about how things have been back at the university, adjusting back to life there, and some, you know, some projects you might have going on. And then we're going to go into a little bit about winter care. So we can kind of, we like to talk about it every year just to kind of catch everybody up and get them used to the flow and the cycle of Bonsai. Because the podcast, we promised that we would, you know, do reminders and then share our future experiences as we go through this, because I mean, we're all still learning, right? So any little tidbits before we kick into the patron part?
No, I've got a full mug of coffee and an entire bag of chocolate, so I'm ready to go.
You're stocked up for this one.
I'm ready. Let's go.
For it to be as cold as it is outside. Well, it's cold here, believe it or not, but I'll mention that in just a moment here.
Is it like cold or is it like cold?
It's just cold.
Okay.
It's Louisiana cold. That's one of my topics actually is different temperate zones versus, you know, people might roll their eyes at how cold it is here versus where you're at. But anyway, before we get too far into rambling on about the weather, our podcast is sponsored by our amazing patrons over at patreon.com/ Little Things for Bonsai People. You can go over there and become a Bonsai Best Bud and hang out in the Discord with all of our patrons, the best buds, the specimen best buds, and just the Bonsai friends. It's a lively chat. We got a lot of members in there now. Thank you guys for growing that community to what it is now. What's up?
I just said ha, because that was a good pun.
Oh, yeah, it is a good pun. I'm sorry. I didn't catch myself being clever there with my my other various dad jokes that I'm kind of developing into this this year thus far. But yeah, but we do have some new best buds. We have Doug, and you guys know that I'm amazing with names. This last name is a little bit different. Doug Unkenholz. UNKENHOLZ. How do you? I mean, you've got quite a last name. I mean, I don't know.
Right. Doug Ukulele.
Ukulele, that's what we're going with. Mm-hmm. Okay. So Doug Ukulele, thank you for becoming a new Bonsai Best Bud.
Sorry. I was going to pick words that sound kind of like it.
No, it's like, I don't know. We'll see where this goes. He might even message you later on and be like, well, you gave it your best shot, but here's the phonetics of my last name. And then we have a new specimen best bud.
Ooh.
Yep. Horn blast sound effect, please, Matt. Mark McWilliams, So thank you so much, Mark, for sponsoring the show at the $30 level. That's amazing. We only have so many Specimen Best Buds, and you're one of them. And you really, really helped build out the show alongside, of course, UN Bonsai Garden in Australia and Bill Butler of Bill's Bayou. Thank you to all of our Specimen Best Buds. It's amazing that you guys are willing to sponsor a show, a podcast show, where we just ramble on about bonsai all day. Yeah, that's really cool. Of course, we have our main show sponsors through Joshua Roth Tools. Thank you, John, over at Joshua Roth. And of course, Underhill Bonsai, the premier bonsai of Louisiana, Bonsai Nursery of Louisiana, sorry, that I happen to manage and work at. But Doug Green wants us to know that he extends his sponsorship as well. Thank you so much, Doug. And then, of course, we can't go on without mentioning our favorite person, all praise him, Matt O'Donnell, the nicest, bestest guy in the world. He makes us sound smart, cleans up our audio, and makes us enjoyable to listen to. If you can go over to mattodonnell.com and fill out a contact form on his website, and if you want to start your own podcast show with him, that's one way to do it. You can also reach him on Instagram, Facebook. He has an email listed on his website if you prefer to do it that way. He's a set bassist living in Nashville, Tennessee. He's an all-around awesome guy. Yes, it's in the script. I say it every time because it's true, Matt. Okay, so with that out of the way, I did want to mention a few other things too. We had talked about Oklahoma Bonsai Societies a while back. Do you remember that, Carmen?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. I don't know if you...
Vaguely. I mean, yeah.
It's in the... It's within our scope of things that we've talked about, right?
Sure.
But yeah, I know we had Austin Atkins. He's one of our Bonsai Best Buds. He's been on the Discord and part of our group for a long time now. Pretty much, when I say long time, our podcast show has been running, 2 years now?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, he's been a supporting member. So thank you so much. And I actually had an outreach from their club. They're calling themselves the Central Oklahoma Bonsai Society. It's a very new, fresh club, and had them reach out to me not too long ago asking about Say Bonsai 2025. So I just wanted to shout them out because I know that's something fresh and new, and that's always exciting to hear about areas that don't have a lot of bonsai things happening. They're finally getting their first club, and they are the founding members of the club. That's really awesome. So thank you so much, Austin. But I did get a message from another gentleman that says that he is part of the Green County Bonsai Society in Tulsa, Oklahoma, named Brad. Thank you, Brad, for reaching out. Just a shout out to Big Brad's Bonsai is the business that he runs out of his hometown.
Amazing.
Yeah. He's in Talukawa, Oklahoma, which is northeast Oklahoma. He is a Cherokee, and he also is a former firefighter. Thank
Sweet.
You so much for making bonsai happen in your local area. And if you have a bonsai club that you feel like y'all need a push, you want some mention, you want people to know that you exist, we love to kind of shout that out and let people know that bonsai is happening all over the United States and all over the world. So that's really cool. So anyway, yeah. So how's things going over at the university now, Carmen? Now, remember, I told you we would catch up on this.
Mm-hmm.
So.
It's good. I think I might have mentioned last time that the novelty of being back has started to wear off as I like get into my everyday routine. And, you know, everybody's used to me being back. I'm used to being back. And like, it's probably less exciting now, but
just not the cool thing to do to say, oh, hey, you're back. Hey, Carmen.
Yeah, it's yes. Like, all right, whatever. Like, I'm old news. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's, you know, that's normal. But so I've fallen into a little bit more tedium. That is the winter season in Michigan. It's definitely a different kind of work than over in Portland. I mean, mostly just because we have very different species here. You know, we're very azalea heavy. And so, like, that's been the bulk of my work since I've been back, as opposed to a lot of conifer styling and maintenance. It's azalea maintenance, a little bit of styling. But overall, things are going pretty good, I would say. So yeah, it's good to be back. It's weird to have a 9 to 5. I found myself last weekend, like, kind of wandering around the house being like, well, now what do? I don't have any trees here to work on. Like, I'm so bored. So like, that's gonna, I'm trying to figure out, like, I know it will pick up as, you know, right now we're in a condo. So, you know, when we get a house, I'll be able to start, you know, gardening and building more trees of my own and that kind of thing. And, you know, once I start, you know, getting into kind of the travel season of things, it'll pick up. So I won't be bored for long and I should try to enjoy it. But it's, it was like, yeah, I don't do enough bonsai anymore. Oh, so I just need that. I need to do more bonsai, which is so funny because like it's my literal job. So I'm just like, more, please. So yeah. Trying to kind of figure out how much more stuff to do on the side and what things to do and how to do them. And, you know, trying not to like stress myself out about not having it all figured out because, you know, really I've only been back a few months and, you know, we're still kind of settling in and figuring out what's next. So trying to just chill out and go with the flow, which I'm not great at doing. So.
Oh yeah. Trust me. I'm like pedal, you know, to the metal when it comes to kind of like thinking things out. Like if we're going to do it, we're going to do it all the way. I mean, it's going to be the greatest thing ever. And then, and then when I end up overbooking things, like I kind of feel like I overbooked things last year and then I got into this year going, no, we're going to do it easy this year. And then yeah, I told you some of my dates.
Yeah.
I'm like, whoops, messed that all up again. So I'm a little bit more stressed out with, you know, now having Rory, in my life, it's a lot different. And I know I get what you're saying. It's like you go to work and you work on trees all day. And then you come home and you're like, now what? And like, my trees are out there. It's just that I've got a little baby boy in my arms and it's not like I can always give my attention somewhere else at the moment. So that's part of the challenge too, is like, I'm starved to do bonsai sometimes, but I mean, I'm making compromises that are well worth the time. So, but yeah, I feel that. And I hope that when you get settled up soon, like it, and find you guys a house for you and Lou and Gus, of course, then y'all get a comparable backyard that will make you happy. So, but I mean, we can get you some trees. Trust me. I mean,
I know I've been like, okay, maybe this summer season I'll buy in some trees and style them and then just sell them off because like, I just want, it's like, I'm kind of back in the maintenance mode of things with the collection. There's not a whole bunch of, you know, there's like not really restyling. We're not getting raw material and styling it. It's a lot of just kind of maintaining what's there. And so I'm kind of missing that creative outlet of, okay, here's something, do something with it. Like, you know, so.
Yeah, I feel that. And I mean, like at the university, it's not like you can just take personal projects or trees there and expect it to go over well over there. Because I mean, every tree at the at that university collection, I'm sure is accounted for. Everything has immense amounts of like, you know, maintenance and stuff like that has to go into it as it is. Do you guys keep like, just some quick questions about public collection stuff. Do you guys keep like paperwork and like documentation on every time something gets done?
No, we try to mark down we had one volunteer who was like super into taking all the notes. So there are some older files from her. I personally don't write down every single thing that happens. I do write down big things. So like if we did a big repot or if there was a disease problem or if there was something that had to be completely restyled, you know, like the kind of more monumental things. And I do take a lot of photos. And we try to have a decent photo record of stuff so that, you know, you can see its progress through the years. So I personally find the photos more valuable, but I know that a lot of people really like to have the written record. So I'm trying to, you know, remember to write down the important stuff, as it happens.
Yeah. And it's, It's kind of funny the way that we work as bonsai people, especially in the professional trades of it. I've forced myself at this point now, and I've gotten to this habit where anytime that I touch a tree and I do something major, like even if it's like a trim that changed the appearance of the tree dramatically, because I do a lot of that creation work. So for our listeners that are jumping into this episode and are not familiar with me and Carmen's work, Carmen's talking about a public collection where the trees have been built. They just need to be maintained at a high level. Whereas I'm building trees from cuttings and, you know, trees that were collected from our grow field. So usually whenever I'm messing with the tree, if I do major cutbacks, I always take a picture of before and after. And if the tree needs that next step, which it's like a 90% chance that if I cut a tree back, I'm going to put wire on it. So there's going to be a bunch of things that could, and because the trees that I work with grow pretty fast in my range. So, and they're very flexible. So a lot of that work can be performed around that time as well. So yeah, that's one of the things that's like a tip for beginners and also our more advanced people. If you guys have fallen behind on taking photos of major work that you've done to your trees, I highly encourage you guys to take photos on your phones. Everybody's got a great phone nowadays that takes high quality photos, better than we ever could imagine back in the day. Cameras that we have on our phones would have costed us thousands of dollars to have. Whereas now you got a phone in your hand that takes amazing quality photos. Take those photos, upload them to your computer and put them in files. That's something I've been trying my best to do. Take file photos, put them on the computer, label it, like for me, bald cypress number one, bald cypress number two, crepe myrtle number one. You know, go through and give them all names, you know, because you'll see a lot of old bonsai blogs where they all have, for instance, like you'll see Walter Paul, and you'll have like Cartagus number 23 or Carpinus number 200. And you're like, geez. But they have all that stuff categorized. And that's the best way to do it, in my opinion. But yeah, it's difficult to take records. I know that. And it's interesting to hear, like, you're like, well, not all the time, but sometimes we'll take photos, you know. Mm-hmm. But then your phone has what? How many photos on it?
A lot.
Yeah.
I'm going to look it up. How many pictures do I have? Does it even tell me?
Mine does. Mine's pretty nuts, I'm going to be honest.
34,000. 383.
There you go. I don't know if I have that many. Hold on. Let's see. Where do I do the thing where I can just see it all?
I went to photos, and then like in the top right corner where it says my initials, I hit that and it told me there.
Okay. Oh, well, I have 13,175. So
I win.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. You win.
Well, I also haven't taken pictures off of my phone for like 6 years. So
yeah, fair.
That could be a problem.
Yeah. And I don't know where this is all gonna go with these photos, like taking photos forever. I mean, my phone's eventually gonna tell me to stop, right? I don't know.
Eventually.
I hear a lot of people have thousands of photos like that, and it's crazy to me. Mm-hmm. But because I had a friend the other day, he was like, I worked on this tree, and I was like, great, let me see. And he's flipping through his photos, and he only had one photo of one awkward angle of the tree.
What?
Exactly. And I was like, and you did major carving, and you probably know who you are out there. I'm not going to say your name because I don't want to call you out.
But he's going to tell me afterwards. So
yeah, he's going to call it to me like, oh, it's all right, man. but yeah, he was carving on a tree, and he made some really significant carving operations on it to increase taper and take out flaws. And it was just like, he had this one angle of it, like halfway through it. And I'm like, set the tree up, take the time, get a backdrop, you know, so on and so forth. That goes a long ways. Mm-hmm. We're kind of getting into winter for the first time here in Louisiana this year, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. I know it's like literally at the time of this recording, we're like the first week of the January of like, so it's kind of silly, right? So you kind of know, because we alluded to it earlier, it was like, what's the temperatures down there? And I don't, this is what's going to make you kind of you know, look at me and be like, okay, whatever. Mm-hmm. It was 28 degrees last night.
Okay, that's cold. Like, especially for Louisiana, like that's below freezing. So I feel like that's legitimate. Oh, in Celsius. Hold on. Let me pull out the Google.
So for our
Google.
Our much more
non-American,
but like arguably like more educated than we are in most cases about okay. the metric system.
28 is -2.
-2 Celsius. You know, mm-hmm. it sounds crazier in Celsius.
It sure does.
But it's really not. I mean, but like 28 is like the first time in Louisiana for the species that we use here. We have to take those precautions. And so to like protect for winter and stuff. And so I thought it would be interesting to kind of go back and forth and talk about, you know, I'm in zone 9, basically 9B. We're broken into A and B because our zones are so microclimate here in mm-hmm. Louisiana, whereas you're in zone 5.
Hold on, I forgot. Let me look. Da, da, da. Hold on. Sorry.
That's okay.
Zone 6A.
6A? Okay, it's a mm-hmm. little bit higher than I thought, but I mean, there's also parts where I know it's a lot colder. And so, you know, like our winter care stuff started, like I said, it started last week when we knew these things were coming. The greenhouses were fired up. We checked all the gas heaters. We checked that the sides are down, all the stuff's nailed down, all the irrigation and the water lines are all ready to go. And so we just started prepping there. And I was talking to somebody about what we do with our trees this time of year, depending on if they're deciduous trees, they're conifers, and of course, tropicals. All of our tropicals just went straight in the greenhouse. No questions mm-hmm. asked as soon as the temperatures dropped below 40. So what were the temperatures? What was the earliest hint of, I know we talked about like a couple weeks back, you already said we're experiencing cold nights, but mm-hmm. what was the beginning of your winter in your zone?
We had everything, you know, we used to put everything away the first week of November. And this year we had it done, I think, mid-November. So we've extended it a little, longer than that. I don't think it was until early December we had everything put away. And that was when, you know, we were regularly below 32 at night. We start getting colds, you know, in October. The nights we'll get like our killing frost in October. And then, you know, we bring tropicals and everything in at that point. And but yeah, I don't mind letting stuff sit out in the cold for, you know, naturally for a little bit. Just because it you know, it's less time that I have to spend regulating temperatures for things. But once we're like regularly below freezing at night, well, and during the day, then we move them into cold storage. So yeah, we were in by December. So usually November, December, we start doing all of our protective measures.
Okay. And so you guys do what's called a cold storage. Mm-hmm. And y'all have the frame in the house, everything. You showed me pictures of that, and mm-hmm. it's a very, very nice setup mm-hmm. For what it is. So for those who are not aware of how that works and stuff, and I've seen cold frames in other people's bonsai collections when you get to colder climates as well, and they're unique because they're not mm-hmm. they're not a true greenhouse.
Right.
So with a greenhouse, so we can talk about the difference here from my experience with what I do at my nursery is the greenhouse is our greenhouse is a 95 by 65 foot structure. It's roughly about, let's see, because when we put it in the ground, it's where we drove the poles in the ground, gives us the kind of the height. So it's roughly about 15 feet tall at its peak at the highest point. Mm-hmm. So it's got some good airspace in there for heat to travel from top to bottom. And then of course we have a gas heater hooked up to it. It's this big, nice gas heater unit that hangs from the ceiling of the greenhouse and blows air. It blows the heat into the building. And then we have circulation fans that come throughout. And we keep the humidity in there pretty high because a lot of the tropical trees that we have, such as ficuses, buttonwoods, Nea boxifolia, schaffaleras, and Portulacaria afras, stuff like that, they like humidity and they like it to be nice and cozy. So our greenhouse is never allowed to get below 50 to 60 degrees, depending on how cold it is, because we want them to experience cold, but we want the swing to be 20 degrees above the ambient temperature outside as well. So if it's 30 degrees, we would love for it to be at least 50 something degrees in the greenhouse. If it drops down a little bit lower, our heater will catch up and keep us in that 50 degree range. It might just take a little bit more energy, but we can maintain that. And so that's kind of how it works with that. Of course, if it gets too hot, which is something that happens a lot in Louisiana. So Carmen, you're saying that you're dealing with like that, not consistent below 32. Mm-hmm. We don't ever get that. So it's a constant swing. You know what I mean? So theoretically, our deciduous and our conifers and broadleaf evergreens really never need to be moved anywhere.
Mm-hmm. That's so nice.
It's true, but then there are some minor measures that I will take that we'll talk about here in a little bit. But yeah, before we get too far into that, tell us about how a cold frame works for you.
So there's a couple of different kinds of cold frames. And, you know, the most basic is just essentially like a hoop house covered in, you know, plastic without really any heaters or fans or anything. It's just kind of like a protective barrier to increase insulation and keep frost off your plants. Ours is probably one of the more complicated cold storage facilities, because ours is essentially a greenhouse, but we don't want it to get warm. So it's like opposite of greenhouse. We want it to stay in a very specific range. So we're going for above freezing, but below, like ideally if we could keep it at 40 all the time. Essentially it's a giant fridge, fridge. But so we keep it above freezing, but below 40 if we can. We can't always do that, and that's okay. But so when, you know, we hit whatever low point we have set on the system, the heaters kick on and heat up to a certain point and then shut off. And then, you know, if it drops again, the heaters will kick back on. So we have it monitored for temperature, and our heaters are only running when they're needed. We do have airflow fans in there for, you know, to keep the heat moving around, make sure everything's kind of about the same temperature. And just for air circulation to prevent funguses and stuff. But we do have active cooling as well. So we've got three ways to cool. We have a top vent that opens, and we're able to stage things. So like if it's too warm, the top vent opens. If that doesn't do it, then the back vents open. And if that doesn't do it, the big fans kick on and start pulling cold air across the whole greenhouse. So we've got multiple stages. So if it's going to be like 45 or 50 outside, you know, I'll make the fans kick on sooner to keep it closer to ambient outdoor temperature. But like right now it's 20. So I have it set so that, you know, if the greenhouse needs to cool, it's not doing its maximum cooling. It's kind of doing its minimal cooling. So that we don't have giant temperature swings throughout the whole greenhouse. So we've been able to keep it, I think our average is like at 38, which is perfect. But it will swing between like 33 and 42 throughout the day, just kind of up and down. But on average, it is holding just enough heat. So everything's getting a cold treatment, but we are keeping everything from any kind of cold damage. And, you know, we've got a lot of temperate trees in there that could take colder temperatures. We used to put them in a cold frame that was, you know, kind of in ground and unheated. And that worked great for those. They were like larch, other natives, a lot of pines. But with the azaleas, it was easier to just build one facility that held everything, kept everything cold. So it's all in one place. We can access everything. And there's not, you know, we're having to go in and out of like a pit in the ground to put trees away and pull them out in the spring. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Pits in the ground are interesting to me because we can't dig too far in Louisiana before you water.
Water.
Yeah. Yeah. Nobody has basements here, which might be weird to some other people.
That's so bizarre.
The people that do have basements have very special circumstances where maybe there's just a higher point. It just so happens that there's a hill of some kind in Louisiana.
Right.
Like there is a mountain, quote unquote, in Central Park in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
It's celebrated as a mountain because it's like just a mound of dirt. It just so happens to be tall enough to be considered the highest point in the whole city because the whole city's below sea level.
Oh, my God. Right.
So yeah. And as you go up north, even here where I'm at, if I dig down, I think I can dig probably 2 feet and I hit like just straight water.
What? That's crazy.
The ground is so mushy with so much water. It's just sitting right there.
That's so crazy.
Yeah. So you can't just dig a hole and just hope that you're going to be able to put stuff down there.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's, and sometimes it gets dry enough where we could reasonably dig, but it's going to rain and there's just going to be water.
Sure.
So yeah, those type of cold storage things are very interesting to me. Like if I were in a colder range and I was going to continue my bonsai practice in a different part of the United States, then and I would definitely invest in that type of operation. Because I heard that being dug a pit is a very ideal thing to keep the temperatures more regulated. The earth is better at it.
Yeah, it was like when I monitored the temperatures one of the winters, and it was like pretty solid 30, 32 degrees all winter. Like it didn't, you know, unless once it started warming up, it was obviously warmer, but you didn't have the fluctuations, like whether it was like 30 or -5, you know, in the pit, it was pretty regularly right around 32.
Hey guys, it's Evan with Underhill Bonsai, and I just wanted to tell you guys about Save Bonsai. It's going to be happening from March 28th to the 30th, 2025. We're going to be everything Louisiana for a full weekend, so we're going to include a crawfish boil, homemade gumbo, and other food trucks and vendors that are very special, I guess you can say, the southern culture of Louisiana. And also, the show will include a bonsai show with its own special awards, including Best in Show, Best Shohin, Best Traditional Design, People's Choice Award, and also a tongue-in-cheek Best Bald Cypress Bonsai Award. Guest artists and visiting artists will include Julian Tsai, Sylvia Smith, Mike Lane, Carmen Lesko-Bianski, Dawn Ketting, Randy Bennett, and Guy Guidry. Each artist will be presenting demonstrations and giving workshops throughout the weekend. You can go over to underhillbonsaistore.com and go under our Save Bonsai Workshops tab, and you can sign up for just regular attendance. It's going to be $25 just to get into the exhibit tent, and then all the workshops will be spaced out, and they will all have individual pricing. We hope to see you guys there.
This podcast is supported by Bonsai Bar, the beginner bonsai workshop popping up in breweries all across the Northeast. Bonsai Bar is 2 hours of tiny tree goodness disguised as a night out with friends. Come grab drinks, create a new tree, and watch as your friends and family get the bug for bonsai. Bonsai Bar is always looking for teachers and assistants, and you listen to this podcast, so you're probably already qualified. Bring your knowledge out to the bar. Apply today. Find event tickets, contact info, and more at bonsaibar.com.
That's something I hear about a lot of other practitioners. I've heard there was a guy who told me he was in, I think, North Carolina, and he dug out the side of like literally a hillside next to his home and then put a cold frame into it.
That would be my ideal situation, is like digging into a hill, but then with like a clear top, or like a, you know, greenhouse style top that vents, because I think that the insulation is just, you can't beat it. It would like be an energy saver. It would be well regulated. It'd be great. So yeah. That's the real dream.
That would be awesome too, because then you can kind of choose what the interior space of that looks like. If you wanted to leave it open and you get lucky, there's like, you guys have like rocks and stuff in y'all's hillsides.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That would be cool if you've like stumbled across like an area where you dug into and there was like some nice little rock pieces in there. And that would be kind of like a little fairy hut dream home thing.
Little hobbit hole.
Yep, exactly. But yeah, that sounds really cool. So like greenhouses and cold frames. A cold frame is just like a modified greenhouse, basically.
Yeah. And it can be simple or it can be like ours, which is incredibly complicated. But in its most simple form, it is, you know, like a piece of plastic over some hoops to keep the frost off.
Yeah. And I mentioned like humidity in my greenhouse, and we keep the humidity pretty high in there. Mm-hmm. Is there a humidity like adjustment to y'all's cold frame?
Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't control for it, but I'm able to monitor it and kind of see where it's at based on, you know, how we water and how the temperature swings. And it's, you know, probably about 50% humidity, which is good. I prefer it a little bit more humid because it kind of insulates the plants against really harsh colds. The dryness can be more of a problem than the humidity, but then with the humidity, you run into disease problems. But yeah, keeping it a little bit humid is something I look for. I don't mind getting a little extra water on the ground when I water, just to make sure that, you know, it has that kind of extra layer of kind of water insulation, essentially.
Yeah. And then whenever I'm where I'm at, it's like, how about 100% humidity all the time, no matter where
perfect.
You're standing? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're inside your home. So
yeah, that's where you don't want 100% humidity.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, it's everything's already dripping as it is over here.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, the greenhouses are a little harder to regulate in humidity for us, but luckily a lot of the stuff we deal with doesn't mind it.
Mm-hmm.
And diseases, yes, will happen in a greenhouse or a cold frame structure. And so one of the things that we can do is we can proactively just treat for funguses and also keep a good eye on bugs, because when you put that many plants that are, I always tell people, like, bonsai are happy, but they're not as happy as they could be if they were in the ground. So you take a bunch of plants that are being they're being put in this juggling act of keeping them healthy and happy, and then a bug will find it in a state where sometimes trees don't go into winter very well. And if they get a little bit weak, then the bugs go crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a high concentration of potentially weakened trees for bugs to invade. So, and this is interesting for me to ask you, for your public collection storage, do you guys do treatments regularly in y'all's cold storage?
No, not yet. I haven't seen any signs of fungal issues. When we get into spring, I may be a little bit more proactive with it because I know the azaleas tend to get some fungal issues, especially on the flowers, when just in general, they just do. And so before we move everything outside to better air circulation, I will probably be proactively spraying. And right now it's kind of too cold to worry about bugs too much. Like there's, if I see them, I treat them, kind of just spot treat, but I haven't had a concern for it yet. If it were a warm greenhouse, like we've got other warm greenhouses that don't have bones. Well, we have got tropicals in the warm greenhouses. And in that case, like if you see bugs, then we very proactively will take care of that. Because like you're saying, when there's something that has bugs and everything else is in a enclosed space with those bugs, the bugs are going to travel. So luckily, cold storage is too cold for a lot of bug issues and fungal issues this time of year. It's a little bit chilly in there for that to be a big problem, but it will be a problem in the springtime. And then, yeah, like if it's a warm greenhouse, that's something you constantly have to monitor because that stuff can get out of control really fast.
So for your greenhouse, because you guys care for a lot of big ficuses, like you sent me a picture the other day of one.
Mm-hmm.
So is the greenhouse kind of treated the same way? You guys keep it at that temperature range, which I'm guessing would be close to what I do, the 50 to 60?
Yeah, we keep, I mean, it's got a low of, I think we're at 55, low of 55, and then it'll vent, I think, at 75, 65 or 75, the vent's open. And then, but, you know, I'm not particularly concerned about it getting super hot in there with tropicals. Like, even if the vents don't open until 85, that's fine. You know, like, that's fine. When we're doing, like, the, we've got, like, a range of five different greenhouses. If we're doing vegetable production, like, we don't want it to be 85. We want it to stay between, like, you know, 65 and 75. But with the tropical bonsai, it's like, okay, don't let it fall below 55. I think our low is set. We don't want it to drop below 55, but I think the low is set at 65. Anyway, and then the temperature, you know, upper limit, we don't want it to be like 120, but if it gets to 85, it's not really a huge deal. So,
yeah. And so that's why I'm kind of going through all this, is because I want to reassure people this time of year, because in my opinion, at this, I don't know how wrong I am saying this, but I feel like what kills a lot of bonsai for beginners is not knowing what to do during winter. So for instance, we had a nicer deciduous tree that got purchased at the nursery. Somebody had purchased it as a gift for their significant other. And, it's a deciduous tree that was going into fall color. And I remember telling the person, it's got beautiful fall color right now. Enjoy it as it lasts. And then I gave really specific instructions. And then of course they went out the window. And then the significant other came over and to the nursery and was asking me all the questions. And I feel like that would have been a great run through of me explaining to that person how this works. And they told me that they were taking that deciduous tree in their house when it got below 40. And I was like, yeah, exactly. I was like, oh, don't do that. That's you're backtracking. exposing that tree to low humidity, 70 degrees, that comfortable 70 that a lot of people prefer in their homes, and then just not even real light to the tree. It's like a cave. It's like a warm cave suddenly. So worst case scenario, if you're not sure what to do with your tree, is bring it in your home. That's worst case scenario. But there are also outliers to when we leave trees out in the cold versus whether or not we bring them into greenhouse or cold storage. And, and I know your work with Michael, and I've also, you know, I went up there, was fortunate enough to see how that works. It's actually, it educated me a lot on that as well.
And to put everything up on the benches and back down. Didn't we do that?
Multiple times. Yes.
Oh my God.
And that's fine, because that's like the learn it, you know, learn it the hard way, and then take it home and then realize how much easier you have it sometimes. So the outliers would be, for me, like, I'll give you an instance. Like, I got a little overzealous and I repotted a podocarpus I have. But I know that podocarpus is tough. And we're talking about podocarpus, mycophilia, the Buddhist pine. It's not a true, people mistake it for a yew, but it's not a yew. It's a podocarpus. And I know they're tough, and they grow really well in Louisiana. They grow fast. They grow big. And you can cut them back almost any time of the year. But as long as you give them a proper treatment, you won't maim the tree because they're so strong. And so that tree, when it dropped down to 28 degrees, I was like, not messing with this. You're going straight in the greenhouse. Because it had fresh growth on it. So by the more information on that is that I repotted the tree in late October. And because in October here in Louisiana, the temperatures went back up to 80. So it was warm. And the tree actually popped new growth in that time. And so it's still cycling through that repot. And so I just was like, you know, when it hard freezes, we'll just put you in the greenhouse, keep your juices flowing. It's going to slow down because of lack of light in the day. It's not as long as it could be. I don't know if it affects you guys differently. So when does the sun go down now for you guys?
It feels like 2 p.m, but I think it's like at 5:30.
Okay. Yeah. It's a little bit later. I wouldn't say too much. Just because of the whole, like, how the Earth is round and the equator thing happens. Mm-hmm. Sorry if you're a flat earther believer. But
wait, what? The Earth's round? Are you kidding me?
We can't go there. We can't go there. Okay. We'll get canceled by our flat earther listeners. Anyway.
If our listeners are flat earthers, no comment. Okay, my app says, rerouting here, sunset is 5:20 p.m.
5:20. Yeah, it's a little bit, it's a little bit earlier. It's dark by like 6 here. So that's about right. But like even that lack of sunlight, the temperature swings will be varied and stuff. So I just threw it in the greenhouse just because I did something goofy. And we do stuff like this as bonsai professionals because we can get away with these things. But we don't ever recommend that other people who are newer to pro bonsai do these things. That's the classic thing.
Don't repot your tree in October.
But you know how many things get repot? Like, I repotted a bald cypress. I sent you the picture of that big one.
Yeah, I know. You guys are nuts out there. I don't know. I mean, it works and it's fine. And your weather is totally different than mine. So yeah. I can't really say it's nutso, but it feels real nutso to me.
Yeah, but it's also it's a big tree. I got a lot of soil, a lot of root mass, and I didn't feel bad cutting off, 25% of the root mass, putting it into a pot that's just as big as the box it came out of, and then styling the tree. Whereas in Florida, where I'm going to be tomorrow, actually, from this recording, they'll do repottings all year long, except for the coldest, absolute coldest, like, time of the year. And that's kind of how we are here, too, is, like, right now, we need to start repotting or collecting Yamadori. Or the window just shrinks really fast.
Yeah.
So our winter could be a month here. And then it goes into like this weird, like kind of spring. And then all of a sudden it'll drop and we'll have a sudden like late freeze. We call them late freezes. Whereas you guys, it's still winter, So we do repots. We do a couple of like cutback things. So it's good to kind of talk about. Like the things that we do seems kind of crazy, but also we're operating a nursery where I have a greenhouse and I have somewhat of a cold frame kind of thing going on with our other part of our greenhouse.
Sure.
That shelters trees from certain things. But like if we get down to 30 degrees, all I need is a few more degrees for the tree, just nothing to happen to it. It's just fine.
Yeah.
So that kind of brings me to different species with different requirements is like, conifers never really go inside a greenhouse or a cold structure.
What?
Here.
Oh, yeah, there.
But I know that there's a few of them, a few choice ones. Like, I remember being in Portland and seeing that. I was like, oh, that's different. Like, Japanese black pine.
Yeah, they're a little bit more sensitive. They don't like to be cold. And so it's kind of one of those situations where, like, in Portland, you don't usually have a lot of time below 32 in the winter, but those couple times that you do, it's easier to just proactively have them in the greenhouse. And then here in Michigan, yeah, they're totally protected. They've been in cold storage for the whole winter because they're just too sensitive.
Yeah. And that's weird to me because junipers, pines, azaleas, and even some of I use a lot of Yaupon holly here. Never bring them in, never move them. I'll put some of my smaller versions of those trees on the ground to kind of help the roots a little bit. But other than that, they rarely ever move anywhere other than just stay on the bench.
Yeah.
How
often in the year are you under 32 for more than 12 hours?
More than 12 hours.
Yeah. Like, do you have, maybe, is there any time where you have a freeze that lasts more than just overnight?
It's rare.
Yeah. So there was
a winter, I think last year, the year before, where it got down to 20, 6 degrees and mm-hmm. then the nights were like 16, 17 mm-hmm. degrees was like the low. And I was like, what the hell's going on? And it actually stayed cold, like frigid. Like I felt like I was up north for a 5-day stretch and then it was over.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was the most extreme it ever got. And I actually, that was the coldest it got. And I did bring all of my valuable deciduous trees inside and like a room where I wasn't using, I purposely letting it stay cold in my house, in that part of the house. And me and Caitlin, we don't really run the heater here mm-hmm. unless absolutely necessary. Now that we got Rory, it's like, we don't want him to freeze his little butt off. So we do want it more often, but
that's kind of you.
Yeah. Caitlin will, in the past we've like let it get down to like 40 degrees inside our house.
Chilly.
Because it doesn't matter. It's Louisiana. It's the next day it's going to be warm again. It right. actually is not a nice thing. We'll bundle up in sweaters and sit around the TV and it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, with the baby, it's a little bit more different.
Right.
But you know, that's the whole thing is like, you kind of have to consider what species. So mm-hmm. for you guys, what are the only trees that stay out in this like iced over winter for you guys?
Everything from the collection is protected. Even when we didn't have the cold storage facility and we just had pits, cold frames, that's what we called it. Not the pit. Well, we called it the pit, but it's essentially a cold frame, which is, you know, essentially cold storage. But anyway, even the pits, you know, everything would be in the pit. There is nothing from the collection that stays out or on the ground at all. Everything's protected in one way or another.
That's really interesting because, I mean, even when I went to North Carolina and I visited the Arboretum there where they have all the really nice collection of trees. We mentioned it on the previous episode with Jonas.
Mm-hmm.
All the bald cypress, American hornbeam, water elms, and various other trees. And there's a couple of pines. Everything mm-hmm. was just kind of chilling outside. Mm-hmm. It was very cold, but it wasn't like how you're experiencing.
We will not be above 32 until next Friday.
Won't even go out until
they spring. Won't go out until, yeah, yep, April probably.
And that's crazy because, mm-hmm. you know, if a lot of these plants they were in the ground, this wouldn't matter. These are species that you have grown where you're at. So you guys even have Rocky Mountain junipers that are brought into cold storage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that blows my mind because, you know, up in Portland, nothing mm-hmm. like that went inside.
Right. And, you know, to be fair, if we did not have the greenhouse, stuff like the Rocky Mountain and the Scots Pine and, the Japanese maples could probably sit on the ground up against the building. You know, they could be probably just on the ground and okay throughout the winter because they are very cold hardy. But half of the reason we have everything in the cold storage is so that I can access it and work on it too. Because once it freezes to the ground or if it's in a pit, like I can't get to it. So it's just easier to have everything here.
Yeah.
But we're at my own stuff. I'm not even going to tell you what I've done with my trees here at the condo. so we'll see if they live. There's nothing valuable here. So don't worry about it. My valuable trees are elsewhere at the moment.
Yeah. So, I mean, cold storage in that way, like you said, up against the side of like, so why do we put the trees on the ground, I guess, is the next question mm-hmm. for that.
So the ground freezes slowly over time. The earth has just a lot of heat within it. So the air temperature will be, you know, 30 or whatever, but the ground isn't frozen yet. I mean, at this point, our ground's probably frozen, but putting, you know, a tree right against the earth, it gets to kind of absorb that heat from the ground up, which provides kind of a layer of, I mean, it's not really a surrounding insulation, but because it's touching, you know, that heat is going to come up into the root zone and keep the roots a little bit warmer than air temperature. So the branches, you know, they're going to be fine, from the temperature, you know, temperature wise, they're able to withstand cold. And the root zone's going to freeze if it freezes. Like in Portland, the ground wouldn't really freeze all the way through in the winter and stay frozen. Here, the ground will freeze and stay frozen. But if your ground's not actually frozen, it's kind of keeping those roots a little bit warmer, which is giving them that protection so you won't have dieback. I forgot where I was going with that. Yeah, so essentially it's just using the heat of the earth to keep your tree a little bit warmer. If your tree's up on a bench, it's going to be surrounded by air, you know, on all sides, and it's going to cool faster and freeze through faster than if it were, you know, touching the ground.
Yeah. I kind of call it like this little igloo effect. Like sort of the top of the soil will freeze, but then the center will be like this nice kind of like gooey inside for the tree. Because the way that the trees are able to regulate their own temperatures within that root ball, they actually could freeze on the exterior, and then the interior will not drop any lower than the freezing point. So you can actually maintain that pretty easily. Because some people will be terrified. They'll walk out and be like, oh, my soil surface is frozen solid. But because of the water inside of your root ball and the live material, the tissue, the living tissue of the roots, the way that they interact with that and they kind of have like their own little bit of they don't have like an internal heater, but they can keep that from freezing over. And I don't know
the absolute. I mean, the roots aren't full of water. They're full of carbohydrates and, you know, all the other stuff that makes up the roots. So eventually, if the roots freeze, the water within the roots can, you know, rupture the cell wall and cause damage and kill your roots. But like how we put salt on the roads to keep them from icing over, the salt water freezes at a much lower temperature than regular water does. So the roots are going to freeze at a lower temperature than the water in your pot. And so the water in the pot and the soil, you know, that's all acting as an insulation. And when the air temperature hits 32, soil isn't going to hit 32 for X amount of hours, which is one reason I don't mind leaving the trees, you know, out on the bench. If it's going to fall to 28 one night, a lot of times I won't worry too much about it because it's one night and nothing's going to freeze all the way through, you know, at 28 in the fall. In the spring, that's a different story. But in the fall, you know, the pot's not going to freeze through one night at 28, especially if it's going to get up to 50 the next day, you know? So it's like, if you're at 20 degrees for 3 weeks, that's a much different story than if you're having 1 or 2 days of a colder temperature. Yeah.
And like that, and this sun has outliers as well, because I had mentioned, I don't really move my trees, but of course and right now I have a very weak hackberry that I'm caring for. That tree, even though I know it's not going to stay below 32 for multiple hours, it's like below 32 for like an hour and a half times. I'll still pop that tree onto the ground just to help it, just for peace of mind. And also, you know, just a little bit of extra TLC goes a long way with plants. And then, of course, my smaller ones. So I got a bunch of Shohin. We're thinking about root mass and the density, you know, per volume. And so theoretically, if it was cold long enough, those little Shohin would freeze a lot faster.
Yeah.
So if you got a giant tree, like some of my trees, I mean, not all my trees are imperial giants, but I have a few. I'm always kind of, I'm like, you'll be all right. You're so big and you got well watered enough that, like you said, like, and that, I'm glad you broke that down for me a little bit better, where you talk about like the salt and the minerals and stuff, comparing it to bonsai. See, like, even I learned something there and was comforted by the fact that winter is not bad. So
winter is normal.
Winter is natural. It's the cycle of trees. They need it. And that's something that's really difficult to explain to true beginners when they come into my nursery and they're like, so you just leave it outside? And I'm like, yes. And they're like, because Louisiana, when it gets down to like into the 30s, people are terrified. But But otherwise, it's just because a lot of people grow fruit trees here in the ground. So we grow like satsumas, limes, lemons, all the citruses.
Mm-hmm.
And those we have to cover because the tops of them will freeze off, and we'll just have, but we've stuck with the ground stock that, you know, the native citrus.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that happens. So you see people wrapping them with, it's really funny. You see like quilts, like saran wrapped around like a citrus tree in people's mm-hmm. yards here.
Well, last winter in Portland, we had a very icy situation. It was, you know, usually once or twice in the winter, it would fall into the 20s and teens for, you know, a couple days at a time. And if there's snow, you know, that gives you a layer of insulation. But we did not have very much snow. We just mostly had ice. And I did take moving blankets, essentially, and wraps like the big hemlock clumps and, you know, the big trees that I couldn't move. Those definitely got a blankie. And it felt really stupid, but like it gave just that little extra layer of, you know, it takes that much longer for the air temperature and the ice to get through. So it just gives you that little bit of insulation that can go a long way.
Yeah. I have a couple of trees that are on stone slab planting. One at my house I put a wool scarf that I had made at the Renaissance Festival over it. And it's because the roots are not in a pot, they are exposed. And I was just like, this will be that little bit of extra protection the plant needs. Mm-hmm.
I always feel, and I feel this way about, you know, heat and sun in the summer, the same as I feel about cold in the winter, that, you know, it's best to prepare for the worst colds that you're going to have. It's better to prepare and be a little bit overprotected than underprotected, because, you know, what's going to happen if you're a little overprotected? Probably nothing. But if you're underprotected, oh boy, you could lose some trees. So yeah. I always say put the scarf on the tree, you know?
Use them. That's Carmen's new thing. She's going to
put the scarf on the tree.
She's going to try to get that on a shirt.
You have a little blankie.
We
could sell bonsai blankies.
We already put one of your quotes on a shirt. I don't know if we're going to invest in little things, blankies.
Aw, little blankies.
Yeah. I would want them to be those, forgot those types of blankets that they used to make a bunch of them where they were like, the entire thing was like a knitted, but it would be knitted to make a big pattern kind of thing. And it had,
oh, like an Afghan.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's the kind of thing I would want for a little things blanket. So if you know anybody totally. That can do that, if there's mm-hmm. any listeners out there.
Anybody crochet? Anybody want to knit or crochet some Afghans for us?
Yeah. If you want to make our merchandise, I'm sure they'll be really expensive.
Because you could probably just go to Goodwill and buy a bunch of Afghans.
Yeah.
But they won't have the little things logo on them.
No, unfortunately not. And they got to be wool too. So they got to mm-hmm. be sheep's wool.
Oh gosh, this is getting complicated.
Yeah, it could. But
and expensive.
But no, I mean, if it makes anybody feel better out there for beginners that are getting into bonsai and they're like, I'm going to lose my trees in the winter. You're less likely to lose your trees in the winter mm-hmm. here in Louisiana than you are to lose them in the summer. I think the summer is the actual killer of bonsai here mm-hmm. Because people will expose their trees to extreme like temperatures in the summertime and then go into the winter with weakened trees and then otherwise mm-hmm. lose things. Because like that cellular mass in the root ball, if you killed half of it during the summertime and then you get a freeze in the winter, there's not much there to save. And then it will just, mm-hmm. it's pretty much done. Mm-hmm. So that's why I always tell people, they're always like, well, do I thin my trees out in the summer? Do I do this? And then what do I do if it's root bound? I'm like, if it's root bound and you got a full canopy in the summer, you're good going into the winter. Mm-hmm. That's what you want. Because some people will root prune their trees back really hard. And then the tree won't perform very well going through the summertime. They'll be like, oh, crap. I'm like, that's the time that you might want to think about a greenhouse for mm-hmm. that tree. So it's a little bit of a juggling act there because you have to make this. Those are all the outliers things. But like, I know we are constantly working on our trees. So for a public collection like you're working on, Carmen, you guys already have the trees built. The root balls are sound. They get they get maintenance pruned. They don't get butchered back to nothing.
Correct.
So, but even still, you guys protect because of the value in the trees, and you don't want to make
Well, and the azaleas have to be protected. It is too cold here to just leave them out. And so, yeah, just by proxy, everything else just gets protected.
Yep. So I wanted to touch on one other topic pertaining to winter stuff before we get to a close here on this particular winter checkup thing was something that was stated in one of Michael's books in Bonsai Heresy. He talks about root death temperature. That's something that ever since I read that has been kind of a little bit more of the, I guess you can call it, say, the truth to me. And so that's another thing that will be another wintertime reassurance for people. And if you haven't heard this, I think we talked about this a while back already, but I mean, it's always good to bring it back up again.
Yeah.
So what is root death temperature, Carmen, since you have the horticulture background, explain it better.
That's when the roots die at a certain temperature.
That took so many years of schooling to give us that statement. Thank you. Yeah, no, but that's the temperature in which the roots will actually die. But what does that mean, though? I mean, like, the roots, when they reach that temperature, because they've frozen through?
Yes.
Some temperatures of plants could get to a certain level pretty low. Like, I know some junipers and conifers and stuff could actually go pretty low.
Oh, yeah. So, some stuff can go, I mean, colder than freezing, and that's, you know... because like what we were saying earlier with all of the sugars and whatever that is in the root tissue, it's not pure water. So it's going to have a lower freezing point than water would. So different species have this different level of hardiness based on, their roots. And, you know, one of the interesting things, we were talking earlier about how black pine is, you know, sensitive. It has a higher root death temperature than something like a ponderosa. You take, you know how at Michael's he had these black pine grafted onto ponderosa trunks. Those we didn't worry about protecting as much as the black pine on its own roots. Right. Mm. So if you have something grafted on something that is more cold hardy, that usually will. Not every case, but generally that characterization of the roots will transfer to, you know, that will transfer to the tree as a whole. So, for your grafted trees, they may have a slightly different requirement. If your foliage is different than your trunk, species wise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, yeah, keep that in mind. Like, that's a really great point. Like, a lot of people have grafted specimens in their higher end collections like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I would love to get somebody else on later on that lives in, like, Colorado. Because I know there's a lot of ponderosa in Colorado. Do you know if people protect in Colorado?
I know they put them on the ground. We should talk to Todd Schaefler because...
that would be a good idea, yeah.
Because I know he had... I don't know if he lost trees, but I remember there was a winter a year or two ago where it got colder than usual and it was a problem. And that might have just been more for newly collected trees because that's something, you know, if you have a tree that it's only been in a box for a season, it's not going to have a ton of roots and, you know, it's a lot more susceptible to freezing. And then conifers too. In that cold weather, you have to remember that, you know, they're still green. They still have foliage on them. And so they're going to desiccate in the wind. And if their roots are frozen, there's no way to get water up to those needles. And so that's an added thing with conifers you have to worry about in cold climates is desiccation of the foliage. Mm. So your tree may be hardy to like 15 degrees, you know, but if it's windy and it's exposed to that wind, that might change the situation a little bit. So that's just one other factor to consider with an evergreen or a broadleaf evergreen like an azalea.
That's a good point. That kind of makes me think of like, if you don't have the proper cold frame storage, mm-hmm. and you're a beginner listening to this right now, just hearing that story alone, putting a tree up against the side of a building mm-hmm. out of the wind or in the corner space between your fence and your home, mm-hmm. and then giving them like build like a small shell of insulation if you really feel like you need to, that mm-hmm. should be more than enough because the heat from your house will do it too. But that wind chill is real.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why you see a lot of like arborvitae hedges get burlapped in the winter. That's really to keep the wind off so that they don't just desiccate when they freeze through. I've had good luck keeping conifers up against my house. I've had junipers buried in snow and they were fine the next year. So if you have snow, just throw it on your tree. That'll help too.
Yeah. And I told people, because this past week, everybody was in Louisiana was so excited. They were all like, it's going to happen this year. They're always praying for snow here in Louisiana. And it does it does snow every like 8 to 10 years. It's great. Because when it does, it's just a absolute shit show. Everyone's
I bet.
They're like, let's go out and see it. And then, of course, you have people who don't have experience driving on icy roads. Mm-hmm. So it just turns into mayhem. Mm-hmm. Branches are snapping out of trees because they don't have that load ever mm-hmm. on them. So there's just all kinds of stuff going on. But, you know, people are like, what happens to your trees if it snows here? And I'm like, that would be amazing. Because the first thing I know what I'm going to do is I'm going to just drop all my deciduous and all my broadleafs onto the ground and just let them get completely buried in snow. And they're like, oh my mm-hmm. God, why would you let that happen? I'm like, that's the best insulation from the winter snow there is, you mm-hmm. know, just that the ground is in Louisiana is definitely not going to freeze.
Good luck. Yeah. That's not happening.
Yeah. If you walked out and the ground was hard, like it can get up in like Northern states and stuff. And it was, mm-hmm. you could feel it. But in Louisiana, like it could be like the snow will blanket it. I felt this before where we actually got like, I think like 8 or 10 inches of snow one time. It was crazy.
Wow.
What was it was a lot for us, mm-hmm. but then we made snowmen. And every time you pulled the snow up, you filled the ground. The ground's just mush. Like it was actually mm-hmm. muddy. So that just means that the ground's just, whatever. The snow's just there. It's just for decoration for like 2 days and it's gone. Mm-hmm. That's one of the funny things about people when you have like climate envy and like zone envy about stuff and you're like, oh, I wish it snowed here. And then it does. And you're like, oh my God, what do we do with our plants? So that's always really funny to me.
The only thing with snow you have to worry about is if you have a broadleaf evergreen or a conifer that is a little bit brittle, you know, if you have a ton of snow buildup, it can move a branch or break a branch, but mm-hmm. that's not very common to happen. In Portland, I would have to go out if it was snowing and if there was more than like 3 or 4 inches, I'd have to, you know, bop all the trees to knock the snow off. But generally speaking, an inch or two will not hurt and they'll kind of shed it as they go. And a lot of people will get concerned about ice covering their trees as well. The hemlocks would get completely covered in ice. Not a problem unless it gets heavy and it breaks. But the temperature, it's actually insulating it. So it's, you know, not really a problem.
Yeah. I've walked out and seen like I've mentioned earlier, my Yaupon hollies, I've walked out and seen their leaves completely just frozen. Like if I were to walk up and bend it, it would just break the leaf off like it was mm-hmm. like an ice cube. But they really benefit from that. They really like it. It makes them flower harder in the springtime because they mm-hmm. actually got a dormancy this season.
Yep.
So that's one of the benefits of that too, is like they need it. They need to be exposed to it. Mm-hmm. It's not going to kill them. So for our beginners out there, it's going to be okay for winter, you know, mm-hmm. unless you're doing something crazy. Like you're trying to, I know a guy that is growing buttonwood in like your neck of the woods. And he has a cellar in his house where he keeps them like basically under grow lights all year. Down mm-hmm. there.
It's that can work. I mean, Jerry Meislick lived in Montana and grew ficus. So you can do it. It's just complicated.
How complicated do you want to get?
Right. Yeah.
And I always tell people, it's like, what species do you want to push with? So I'm just going to say it here is, I always have to mention it, bald cypress. If you're in Louisiana and you don't want to kill your tree, just get a bunch of bald cypress bonsai and then never move them. Never take them inside a greenhouse. Never put them on the ground. If they're healthy and got full roots, like, you're just fine. Don't fight the fight unless you got a really complicated setup and you're willing
unless
to fight.
Unless you really
fight.
Want to fight the fight.
Yeah. Elms, bald cypress, hornbeams, hackberries, all day long here. We'll be fine. but yeah, sensitive stuff like a few tropicals. And then, of course, we cannot get alpine thing, anything remotely close to like Rocky Mountain Ponderosa pine, sorry, or Engelmann spruce, or any of the other beautiful conifers that y'all get to play with sometimes there. But that just happens. So
until you get a bonsai fridge.
Until we figure out the bonsai fridge thing, which even then, I don't know.
That'll be complicated.
Yeah, that's another complicated layer. So one last little question here for us to kind of to ponder. So we're talking about like temperatures and stuff and like how what to do whenever it gets cold and what species are fine. We talked about greenhouses and cold frames. How cold is too cold to grow bonsai in your opinion? And we're just saying this hypothetically, like where does the line of growing bonsai stop?
You know, well, like, do you want like keeping them outside, like, are we making modifications?
Yeah, I don't know. It's like what zone does it cut off in? You know,
it doesn't.
Yeah, even in Antarctica, you can't
grow.
You could
do it.
You could up there. You could
down there.
But sorry, North Pole. North Pole. We're talking
Santa's
about
Santa's growing bonsai, probably. I don't know.
Santa's got his own little Christmas trees, but like, how cold is too cold? Where it's like that's the cutoff because.
Yeah,
no.
I mean, you know, if it's going to hit 16 and you don't have any kind of protection, that's concerning.
Yeah, I don't know. So
if you can protect your tree, I don't think there's a limit.
Yeah, because the grow season is the grow season. It doesn't matter if it's 11 months like it is here or it's, what is it, roughly about 6 to 7 months for you guys?
Maybe six. It's short.
And some places it's way shorter. And I can't fathom growing a bonsai tree like somewhere like Alaska, I guess, where like where it's like warm. I don't know how long the summertime in Alaska is.
Because like northern Michigan here too, like they'll get snow into June and then it'll start snowing again in September. And you know, here we're kind of April to October. So
that's crazy where there's just like a hard line of just like, here's winter. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, because I'm always looking for winter here in Louisiana. I don't know.
You could come here. We've got lots of it.
No,
but you know, the other nice thing about the cold storage though, is that it's a season extender. So I can start repotting earlier than I would if I had things in like a pit or on the ground. And things are going to start pushing sooner, which is fine with me because that means I get to do more work. I can develop the trees faster. I can push, you know, things that I need to have two flushes of growth. I can start them in March instead of in May, you know. So that is the benefit of having some kind of cold storage. The only issue, though, in that case is you do have to be extra careful about keeping it warm enough and not putting your trees out too early because the new growth is going to be problematic with spring freezes. So you may have to protect them a little bit longer, but you can push growth a little bit faster in the springtime. So
yeah, that's a good point. And you can also control light and stuff too if you really want to be really specific. You control water uptake and all that stuff. So
we've got a couple weak azaleas, sorry I'm just like ranting now, but we got a couple weak azaleas that I'm gonna pull in February, repot, and then put them in the greenhouse early and try to push extra growth on them. So essentially extend their season by a month or two just to see if I can get them stronger, faster than were I just letting them go in our natural spring, summer. So we'll see.
Cool. We're going to get updates as we go because things are going to be different this time around for you as well. Like I was mentioning earlier, how cold is too cold? So if you live in Alaska and there's a bonsai club in Alaska, please reach out.
I know somebody who used to live in Alaska who was growing bonsai. Granted, it was a lot of hemlocks and whatever other conifers were up there, but he was doing it.
Yeah. Somebody from Alaska, please reach out and tell me so I can just kind of, I want some follow up on this episode too. Like if you're in the Discord with our Bonsai Buds, just kind of drop in there and say, this is what it's like in winter. And we have a lot of Australian listeners. They're like, right now it's summertime. I'm like,
yeah, they're like,
wait,
it's 95 and humid.
What is your winter care like for what y'all's winter would actually be like down there? What is the winter care? You know, like I said, Canada, Alaska, what's the winter care when we're talking South America and, you know, in Africa and Europe. And like, I want to know all the different ones. I want to see, you know, just kind of fill it out. If anybody responds, we'll shout it out and we'll kind of talk about it a little bit. If nobody cares to talk about what their winter's like, then okay, well, we'll just.
Then fine, whatever.
I'll go next. It's not going to hurt my feelings. But I am interested to know because I have my take, I have Carmen's take, and then I know that in Florida where Mike's at, things are different too. Speaking of Florida. So yeah. If you have any other statements about, winter stuff, we can move to some just like light topic stuff and then close out.
Yeah, I got nothing.
Cool. I'm glad that we could sponge all that out of you today. But yeah, so next week I will be, well, tomorrow starts my travel, but, I will be in Florida from, so at the time of this recording, which we're going to be behind, but by the time this comes out, I'll be back, obviously. But I'm leaving tomorrow, driving 8 hours down to Ocala, Florida. My first stop is going to be at D&L, which is where I was talking to them on the phone earlier. It's where David Cutchin operates. And I talked to old David, is what they call him over there. So he's the guy that young David's taking over the nursery from. It's really fun. I talked to old David. He's a really nice guy.
Nice.
So I'm excited to go see their operation. If you guys are not aware, David Cutchin is he's pretty high up there as far as like doing really, really high levels of bonsai in South Florida. So they're like central to south, you know, I'd say definitely off the panhandle there on the peninsula. And I was like, oh, I want to catch him, and just talk to him for a little while and hang out there for the day at their nursery and see just, I mean, I've heard a lot of good things about him. And, somebody told me he might be down collecting bald cypress. And that's funny. We talk about how the winter and stuff is, and he's going down and collecting pond cypress, which is the Taxodium ascendens, decidium conversation thing that happened a little while back, but whatever. And so he's out there collecting trees at this time of year, which is, you know, some people that's kind of crazy because, but I think that collection happens now, but it just depends on how cold you're willing to get, I guess, when you're out collecting plants here.
Well, or if you can, I don't know if I can even dig in the ground right now. So
for you, the ground thawing is really what it is.
That matters.
Yeah. But for us, it's like, it's cold. The trees are dormant. Let's go get them. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, he's out there getting pond cypress, and he's got some beautiful pond cypress that a friend of mine sent me pictures of. He's like, yeah, he's got some really nice stuff out there. So I'm excited to go see that. And then I'll be going down into, I think it's Clearwater is the name of the town. And then Sarasota and Gainesville. And teaching at three different bonsai clubs, giving demos and workshops, and then going to people's houses and working on trees. So it's like a mini tour, I guess you can say.
That's a lot of Florida.
Yeah, it's down. And then some. I was even talking to they call their club the Shofu Bonsai Society, where they're based out of next to Clearwater. I hung out in Kissimmee for a little while. And then went to Orlando and went to Fort Myers to go do all that stuff. And now I'm here going, I'm going to go down to Clearwater and we're going to go up into Sarasota and then up into Gainesville. So it's kind of like I'm going to drive the full length down and then trek my way back. But it's a really interesting thing. I'll be teaching bald cypress bonsai, but you know, it is what it is. But yeah, there's a lot of interest in that. It's a very common tree, obviously, in the area. And they're right on that edge of like, you can grow a lot of them. They grow them down in Fort Myers at the nursery down there. But they're in really high demand right now because of popularity.
Yeah.
It's gone pretty well. But yeah, it's going to be a fun little trip. And then also to mention that BSF, the convention, I will be there in May, late May, doing headline with, it's going to be me and Laurent Darrow. So we'll see how that goes. It's going to be fun. Go look at Laurent's social media. That's all I'm going to say. So it's going to be an interesting show as well. So can't wait to go do that. But anyway, yeah, I think there's a couple of other things. There's something that's going to happen right before that that I don't want to talk about yet. Carmen, I think I've already mentioned it to you, but I'm not going to tell. I'm not going to talk about it on the show until I'm pretty much on my way. But it also includes work on a Bald Cypress.
What?
It's just really goofy.
That's crazy.
But it's different. But anyway, and then also I was kind of thinking it over this year. Some updates, some things I'm thinking about. I'm just going to go ahead and bite the bullet. I'm submitting to Nationals this year. Me and Doug talked about it for Underhill.
Oh, yeah. So. Obviously.
So I'm going to be submitting a...
Bald Cypress?
Bald Cypress. I'm going to be submitting the one that was in Bonsai Central that you said was really cool.
Cool.
A tall tower looking one. I'm going to try that one out and see how it does. I don't think Ghoul is going to be what Bill's looking for.
Yeah, I think go with I like the tower. That's a good name for it.
No, it doesn't have a name, but
well, it's tower now.
It looks like the tower, yeah. But yeah, I think it's good enough, and there's a few other trees I can throw in there. Like I've been housing quite a few of Guy Guidry's older trees, and there's a possibility that one or two of them will be good enough. I mean, I don't see why not, and I'm sure Bill would be like, please bring those up here. So you guys probably can expect me to be at Nationals this year. This will be September 9th, I think. And you're going to be there too, right?
Most likely. Yep. We're going to submit, and try to have a presence. My, technician, really wants to go as well. So I think both of us will likely be there. If not, he at least will be there. But I'm planning on it. So
yeah. Yeah. So yeah. It could be a good time.
It's
it was a good
fun.
Time last time.
It was. Yeah. And it's going to be even more fun this time. Cause this time they've got, ABS is partnering with, Nationals. So it's going to be the whole learning seminar situation plus the national show. So there's going to be, it's going to be like, it feels like it's going to be twice as big. I think they're going to have to do the seminars. I think they're going to do that out of the hotel. And then the show, I don't know if the show is, I imagine the show will be still at the usual place, but we'll see. I don't have enough info yet, but
yeah, it's all in the works. And, I think Bill Valvanis is taking submissions for trees currently. Like I think it just opened up for this year.
I gotta figure out what,
I'll have to go look
what I'm putting in there.
Yeah. Go ahead and start prepping stuff. Get it ready. I know I got a lot of work to do, on my trees in particular as well, but yeah, for all our listeners that do the national show, and if you're a listener and you've displayed those trees there, you know what's going on. But if you're new to bonsai and you have trees that you think would be worth it, you know, tell them that Evan and Carmen sent you if you make it.
Don't tell them that.
They were like, oh, we listen to the show. No,
who's that? They'll be like, who are they?
Yeah.
Are you gonna vent there?
I don't know.
You should, just so that I can hang out at your table.
It's 20 hours.
Well, if you're going to put a tree in.
I'll check with Bill and see, but, you know.
That'd be a lot.
It would be cool to have a small table and then have the chance to sell a few trees. That is a decent point. But
I know.
We'll see. But anyway. Well, anything else for this episode you can think of?
No,
nothing in particular.
I don't think so.
Welcome to Little Things 2025, where we still do the same stuff.
Where we still don't know what we're talking about.
You're still like,
I don't know if I can. I think it's public knowledge. I don't know if it's public knowledge. I'll wait till I'm for sure that it's public knowledge.
Yeah, there's a couple of things that's going to happen.
There's some stuff coming this year, which is pretty fun.
Big spoilers. No spoilers yet.
No spoilers.
But also, just keep listening and you'll see.
Just keep listening. And you'll find out.
Yeah. And I think when I'm in Florida next week, I'm going to bring my my recording equipment and I'm going to see if I can maybe snatch up a special interview with somebody down there. I don't know.
I was you're going to record with me all the way from Florida. Never mind. Just talk to somebody else.
I don't know. We'll see.
Whatever.
I'll let you know, but I know that scheduling conflicts and all that could be.
Yeah, I know.
It might be a thing. We'll see.
Having also, like an actual job is hard sometimes.
Oh, I don't have one, I guess.
Me. I can't just
now
like,
that you have the regular job.
Now yeah. I have to like be there and stuff.
Yeah, so it's all right.
Usually,
we'll figure it out. Well, if I talk to someone, I'll let you know, and then the listeners will know because then there will be an episode of it.
Great.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, that's our winter, our greenhouse, cold storage, protect your trees. Don't protect your trees from winter, depending on where you live. Just go with the flow. Make sure you do research. Talk to your local professionals. Don't just take it from our show. Take it from other sources as well. That how you should treat your trees in wintertime. Because
if you have questions, you know, put them on the Discord. Put them on Instagram for us. Send us an email. Send Evan an email.
We'll try to
clarify because I know each situation has a lot of nuance.
Yep. Yeah. So let's go through our bonsai best buds list. By the way, there was a featured best bud that I forgot to mention earlier. Sorry, I didn't mention your name at the very beginning, but this featured best bud is going to be Wesley Thompson. Thank you, Wesley Thompson, for sponsoring.
Wesley Thompson, woo!
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm sorry your name is coming at the end where we're just going to list off all the other people anyway, but here it is.
You can say it again. Wesley Thompson.
Wesley Thompson, thank you for sponsoring our featured best bud. In fact... Matt, I don't know if you're going to pick up on this, but if you could like edit that into the beginning, that'd be really awkward, wouldn't it? Which
no, because you'd just be like, and our featured best bud this week is Wesley Thompson.
There we go. Just use Carmen's bit from right there. There we go. Anyway, so our list is going to be Wallace Woods Pottery, Bonsai Samurai, Retron Studio, Wesley Thompson. Thank you again, man. Joseph Domingue. David Smith, Eddie Fernandez, Byron Myrick Pottery, Chantel Wynn, Hist Warrior, Christina Carforia, David J. Bacchini, Gilbert Hilrez, Sean Seaman, J.M. Stewart Woodworking, Joshua Roth Limited, Nancy Hoffman, Nate Murray, Ben Crean, Victrina Ridgeway, Timothy Arsenal, Chris Fossoon, J.A.S. Potts, Bonsai Marine, AC Castle, Lewis Torres, Austin Atkins, David N, Chase Pertwee, Taylor Peacock, Greenwich Gardens, Backyard Bonsai Australia, Justin Knight, Joel Jenkins. It's not delivery, it's Ryan DiGiorno.
Yay.
Sorry.
No, thank you so much. I am so happy you did that.
Yeah, no, I'm going to do it every time.
I'm sure he's not that.
He wrote that in an email. So
it's
I'm just going to go with it. I like that a lot. Snappy Chappers, Joshua Bentley, Ricky Ruins, Boyd Snellgrove, Vicky Auth, Chunky Trunks, Mark Mattsai, Draco, Micah Rouse, Joseph Gardano, Kathy Barbazon, FTNRFN, Mark Saul, DK55, Rico and Jeremy. Please start mixing up y'all's names with just weird things because it's so much fun to read those sometimes.
Chunky Trunks.
Yeah. If you guys want to check out more of my content, you go over to Underhill Bonsai on YouTube. I've got some educational videos, Bonsai 101 and so forth videos coming out. As I get them produced, I'm trying to do a monthly release. So we got a handful of them. They're pretty cool. Then you can go over to underhillbonsai.com. You can go look at some of the stuff some articles that I've written. Right now I'm on this water elm planar aquatica kick right now. So I've got a couple of articles going on with that and the history of that species in Louisiana. And then, of course, you can go to Instagram, Facebook, follow me or Underhill there as well. And then for Carmen, where can I go check out your stuff?
You can find me on Facebook and Instagram at Becoming Bonsai. I also have recently gotten onto Blue Sky Social.
What in the hell is that?
It's the new Twitter by the Twitter guy.
Blue Sky Social?
Yeah.
And I feel it's old right now.
Well, I'm saying it because, the world is imploding, but,
Anyway,
whatever. So it's the guy who made Twitter, developed Twitter, and then sold Twitter, decided to just essentially remake Twitter. It's called Blue Sky. So I'm on there, Becoming Bonsai, as well. And what am I saying? Don't forget to check out the Purple Pot Society, the National Women's Bonsai Group. We work to inspire and educate women in bonsai. And I remember the thing that I was going to say. I am doing a presentation for the Ann Arbor Bonsai Society February 26th, I believe, at Matha Botanical Gardens. I think it's going to be a hybrid. So I think it's going to be in person, but I think there's going to be a Zoom as well. I think there's going to be a virtual option. So if y'all are local, come say hi. And if you are not, there may be a chance to get in there. I don't know if you have to be a club member to access the virtual bit, but I can look into that. But yeah, if y'all are around, kicking off the year with my hometown group, so looking forward to that.
Really cool.
Yeah,
make sure you guys check it out if you're local. That's always the best way to get into bonsai, is to look out for local events. And also for the Purple Pot Society, you don't have to be a woman to join. I am a member of that society, and you guys support women in bonsai, so make sure that you keep on that. So yeah, I will catch up with you guys on the next one. We're in Florida. We'll see how that goes, and then Carmen will more than likely be there. I'm not going to exclude you. I'll let you know how it works.
It's fine, whatever.
So thank you guys for hanging out this week. We'll talk to y'all in the next week.
Bye.